Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of November, Veterans Day in this country. Robert Mankoff is our guest, and we're going to have great fun this hour. He's the cartoon editor, what a job, of The New Yorker, and more than 800 of his cartoons have been published in The New Yorker in the past 30 years, including, what an honor, the best-selling New Yorker cartoon of all time. He's here to talk about a new book, the New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest book, which is a sampling of the wonderful submissions of the winners, losers, also-rans, and in-betweens of the more than 350,000 people who have entered more than 1 million captions since the contest began. And he has done the introduction to this collection. He is the author of the book, The Naked Cartoonist, A New Way to Enhance Your Creativity, which was published in 2002. He's also edited dozens of cartoon books and published four of his own. He edited the complete cartoons of The New Yorker, which was the coffee table book for the 2004 holiday season, featuring all of the then 68,647 cartoons ever published in The New Yorker since its debut in 1925. He's with us this hour. We're happy to have him as a guest and to welcome your phone calls as well. 800-486-8655 is the number. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that, and that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Robert.
It's a pleasure to be here, and since the Complete Cartoons was published, we've published a couple of thousand more. Now we're over 70,000, and we're chugging along.
And you had the best of all time?
Let's not go there.
What'd you say?
Let's not go there. I don't think it's the best cartoon of all time. It just, once we put things online, that was a very good selling cartoon. It's a guy at the, you know, at his desk, a businessman. He's looking at his Rolodex. He's saying, "No Thursdays out. How about never? It's never good for you." And I guess a lot of people related to that cartoon. I wouldn't think it's the best. I mean, there is no best cartoon. There's not a best tasting food. There's not a funniest cartoon. But there are cartoons that resonate particularly with certain people. So much so that they will buy them on CartoonBank.com and the New Yorker store.com.
Right. I was amazed as you look at, because you include the percentages of how many of the cartoons in the book got first place, how many got second,
right,
how many got third. And I ranked, and I looked at it myself, but to try to cover it up to find out what was first. And I agreed with, I think, almost everyone except one, where I would have picked the third choice.
Well, see, we could have this as sort of something on the internet, like eHarmony, like a dating service. So you could find your own sense of humor, just for people who don't know exactly what it is.
Oh, I love that idea.
The back page of The New Yorker presents an incongruous, some sort of a strange image, as it were, of, let's say, a boardroom with everybody's got a parrot on their shoulder, okay?
Yes.
And then there's a CEO there also. And you look at this strange, incongruous image, and your job is to come up with some sort of caption for it. And to do that, is actually, you know, quite difficult. Some very, very smart and logical people, in fact, I think primarily very smart and logical people, will look at it and they'll say, let me try to solve this like I would a crossword puzzle, in which there's one correct answer. But what it demands is this divergent thinking. So if that was this image with parrots on everybody's shoulder, well, you'd have to start free associating. So, Catherine, what would you free associate to that image?
Talking.
Talking, right. Parrots talk, right?
Right.
And they repeat things, right?
Right.
Oh, now maybe we're getting there. Maybe we're getting towards the solution. So one of the answers to it that we picked in that case was one man talking to another saying, Dave, we've got to think of a better way to record our meetings. Okay, so that sort of solves it also. Well, you know, parrots are a little messy too, so maybe there's some sort of dry cleaning joke in there, right? Parrots or pirates have parrots, right?
Right, right.
Maybe this is some sort of raider company. But the one actually that won, and remember the one that wins is we pick the three finalists, and every week there are about 5,000 entries.
Goodness. So,
but we look at every single one of them. We don't look at who is entering, whether it's a Supreme Court judge, Mayor Bloomberg, Chevy Chase, all people I think may have. I don't think the Pope has been involved, but various presidential candidates. We look absolutely at the caption. We pick three, and then people vote on that. Now, one of them ones that we picked that won that particular contest was one guy saying to the other, "Shut up, Bob. Everybody knows your parrot's a clip-on." Now, you can see there, one of the things that we try to do there is pick from sort of three different humor constituencies, as it were. Some people like more incongruity, a little bit sillier type of humor. Other people like, you know, something a little tighter, maybe even a little bit cornier. Maybe they like puns or wordplay. But there is actually no right or wrong. It's like someone saying to you, when you like a joke, saying, "Well, you know, no, you didn't." Or when you ate at a restaurant and enjoyed it and said, "You didn't enjoy it. That food wasn't any good." Or said, "Well, it was for me." And I think that's sort of the beauty and the fun of it.
Yeah. I love them, too, because I remember when I was in – this is terrible. I was in eighth grade, and I've never been able to draw anything. So I got a D. It's the only D I ever got. And what's it in? Art. Can you imagine an art teacher giving a student a D for
having said? Very, very mean.
Terrible. But I redeemed myself because I wrote a caption for a cartoon, and I'll remember it forever, and I got an A on the caption. The drawing was horrific,
right?
But the guy liked the caption so much that he just laughed and laughed, so I figured maybe this is my calling, right? So
right,
I need to,
yes, and for many people in this book, in which we selected 100 best ones, perhaps, in which there's been interviews with the winners and the people who runner up, and also online at newyorkercaptioncontest.com, there's a database of all over now over a million captions, so that if you want to look, if you have the time, and who knows, many people do have the time today because maybe they're unemployed and they need a laugh. Oh, everybody groans when you say that.
Well.
Anyone can look, of course, at the thousands of captions. You can also look if you've also submitted your captions, and by putting in your email at newyorkercaptioncontest.com, you can see all of your captions. And naturally, since it's a commercial enterprise, should you conceivably want to buy a print of your own caption and the cartoon, well, of course you can.
So who does the cartoons?
Well, the cartoonists in the New Yorker magazine do the cartoons. I mean, at the start, the cartoonists do 10 or 15 cartoons every week. They're sort of rough drawings, and some of them work and some of them don't. And they do this week after week, and often we would select a picture, sort of, you know, some sort of picture that we thought would work well for a caption contest, and say, well, let's see what our million readers can come up with. And now what's happened also is that many of the cartoonists just do unusual images, which somehow they have to feel will have a potential for supplying a good joke. And we usually find that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Do we have something that most of us will laugh at? Is that when you have the judges look at these, is there something that tickles everybody's funny bone? Or do you have fights
about what's funny? Humor is subjective. If you're in a group of people, you will find that humor is contagious. And that's why we have audiences and laugh tracks. But when you look at humor and, you know, various psychological tests, you'll find there's no cartoon that everybody likes. There's pretty much no cartoon that everybody hates. Humor depends on your own personal experience, your own life experiences, what you like and what you don't like, what you're sensitive to do and what you're not sensitive to. Generally, I mean, in a broader sense, let's say in editorial cartoons, not surprisingly, we like cartoons, or in political humor, we like jokes made by someone we like about someone we don't.
Right.
And that will do for our topics. I mean, many people might think jokes about no joke about religion will be funny because they are very, very religious. So a Bruce Eric Kaplan cartoon in the New Yorker, where God is saying to one of the angels, I hate to admit this, but everything happens for no reason at all. Now, many religious people will find that funny, but maybe some, you know, maybe some would not. I mean, as a agnostic, I often make jokes poking what I think is gentle fun at religion. I mean, one of the few of them that I've done along those lines are a lawyer on the phone saying, "Act of God, no problem, we sue God."
Oh.
See, that got a little. Yeah. See, now when something touches on someone's sensibility, they have this combined laugh like you did. Now sometimes the laugh is ha ha ooh,
right?
You see,
right.
Where the laugh is their actual sort of reflex take, and then their social comment, which is, "I'm really a good person," and just because I'm laughing at that, I don't want you to take it the wrong way.
Yeah. And the shorter the better for the caption contest, is that right?
What's that?
The shorter the caption, the better?
Well, I would say there, you know, humor has its rules about surprise, brevity, soul of wit, right?
Yeah.
Shakespeare.
Right.
But if, of course, humor demands also every once in a while that the rules be broken. So you can have a very long caption. Generally, you know, captions that go on too long or trying to pack too much into the cartoon and not really doing what a cartoon does so well, which is to compress a comic idea concisely.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls for Robert. Our number is 800-486-8655. This hour you get to speak with the cartoon editor of The New Yorker, no doubt the most important position at the whole magazine. He is also a cartoonist. He's had 800 of his cartoons published in the magazine in the past 30 years. He is also the author of The Naked Cartoonist, A New Way to Enhance Your Creativity, the editor of The Complete Cartoons of The New Yorker. And we're talking this hour about the new book, The New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest, the winners, the losers, and everybody in between. 800-486-8655 is our number. George from Milwaukee, our first caller, Robert. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. It's great. I love it. I submit on a fairly regular basis.
Do you? Great.
Yeah.
And your name is why?
Yeah, I've never gotten first, second, or third, but the somewhat frustrating thing is, like,
how do you spell your last name, George?
Came, you know, like, are you in the top 25 or top 100, or do you pare it down so you're maybe looking at like 20 at the end? And
well, what we do is that we have a computer program, so all the captions come in, okay, but the captions aren't just sort of looked at randomly one after the other, because really we would go insane. So what I do then, and what my assistant does, is we sort of sort them by keyword, because the computer can search that. So we see all of the cartoons. Let's say with that parrot cartoon I mentioned. So we might put in the word record, or we might put in for parrots, we might put in the word poop or whatever. You know what I mean? We might do something like that, and so that we can see all of those captions. And then we go through all of them, and what we try to do is just break them down into the major categories that the captions fall into. So let's say I'm actually pulling up a recent caption contest. So there was in one of the caption contests, there's a politician, and he's in the woods. And he's surrounded by security, but also by a bear, a snake, you know, a deer. Okay? So then how we pare that down then is we do sort of different type of picks. Okay, referential. You know, so that would be to the political campaign. So it might be, if you vote for me, I will shoot you in person, not from a helicopter. That is my promise. Okay. Or it might be referential compared to a speech, right? A big speech, in which case it would be, "Mr. Rabbit, tear down this forest." Okay? Or, "Read my lips, no new taxidermy." Or, "I did not have sexual relations with that wombat."
Oh, they're all good.
Then, okay, so that would be speeches. Then the other thing we might have, pandering to the animals. "Please join me in a moment of prayer to Gaia and the animal spirits." Endangered species, miscellaneous. So for each contest, we try to give it some sort of order so that we can look at it and pick from these different categories. So that's in short, or maybe actually a little bit long, is the way we do it.
I hope you win sometime, George.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for the call. And how often does it happen that people have exactly the same caption? And then what do you do?
I mean, all the time.
Oh, does it?
For instance, we had a cartoon in which it's a whale in the dock in a courtroom, and the lawyer is saying something, and probably about 300 or 400 person had alleged killer whale. And actually, that was the one that won. We picked one at random of all those people who had that. So while there are maybe 5,000 different captions, there are not 5,000, you know, completely different captions. Often they are similar, and then we try to look for the wording, the conciseness of the caption, or just which one strikes our fancy.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, George. Let's go to Richard from Nina. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm recalling a cartoon which I believe was in the New Yorker years ago, and I think it illustrates some of your points.
Yeah.
It shows two guys wearing loincloths and scraggly beards squatting at the mouth to a cave by a fire. They're gnawing on some kind of bone. They're looking over a lush valley, and there are wildebeest and gazelle and whatever grazing in the valley. One turns to the other and says, "Well, it just doesn't get any better than this."
And I think, you know, that's the classic way that, you know, that humor works. And that cartoon is funny in a rather sweet way. And one of the things the New Yorker cartoons do, I think, which is, this is sort of different than the caption contest, but the cartoon is, we actually have done over the years, is the humor, and I think this is distinction to an in contradistinction to a lot of humor in the culture, is benign. It's what I call affiliative humor. When we see these cave people, okay, it's a little funny to us, but of course they're not real cave people. They're just cartoons. But also it gives us a perspective on our own lives that whatever we're thinking now that, hey, it just doesn't get any better than this, you know, 1,000 years from now, this is going to seem pretty lousy.
Right.
Or maybe pretty great. So it's the real meaning, I think, of humor in which we identify and we have a broader perspective rather than humor, and certainly there's a certain type of humor like this in which there's sort of a butt of the joke, someone who isn't us, and it's what I call the humor of self-satisfaction, whereas the New Yorker humor is maybe often the humor of self-dissatisfaction.
Thank you, Richard, very much for the call. When did you start doing cartoons yourself, Robert?
When I was 8.
Wow, really?
I started this rather early, but it wasn't until I was about 30. And when I first got my first cartoon published in the New Yorker, I had taken a sort of divergent, a wayward, meandering path through my life through graduate school and looking for a degree in experimental psychology, which left me with everything but that degree. And I like to say I'm an undocumented PhD. That document that I needed was my thesis. But I sold my first cartoon to the New Yorker magazine in 1977.
So, do you have it framed somewhere?
What's that?
Do you have it framed?
A train?
Framed. Is it framed in your house?
Oh, is it framed? Is it framed? I can't hear. Is it framed? No, it's not framed because I sold the cartoon. I sold that cartoon. Someone bought it. The collectors buy the cartoon all the time. Let's see what I do have framed on my wall. Well, I have my diploma from the High School of Music and Art. And here's a humor license because, you know, in New York State, you have to practice humor.
Right.
You do. I mean, where you are, we're in Wisconsin, really, it's very, very free and easy. Anybody's allowed to make a joke, but we really try to restrict things here.
Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. Robert Mankoff is our guest. Robert is the cartoon editor of The New Yorker, and we're talking about their just released book, which is very funny and fun, The New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest Book. And Here's our number, 800. Thanks, Richard, for your call, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome more phone calls for Robert. Our number is 800-486-8655. Just a couple reminders. Tomorrow during this hour, we're going to – this is a beautiful book. We're going to be talking with the editor of the National Geographic's huge book, An Illustrated Atlas of the Ocean. And Thursday, we'll be paying tribute to Studs Terkel, and we'll have some – Calvin Trillin is going to be joining us. Robert would be interested in that. He writes for The New Yorker. And we'll be hearing from interviews that we have done with Studs Terkel over the years. So paying tribute to a heck of a guy. And curiosity, I love, is what he wanted people to say about him, that curiosity never killed this cat. Let's go to more phone calls. Ryan from Onalaska. Hi, Ryan.
Hi there. How are you guys?
Fine. You?
Good, good. Just so ironic what he was just discussing right before you went to the break. I, too, am just about 30. I'm 28. I'm back in college right now, and I'm a psych major.
There we go. There we go. You're path out. You're escape route.
Right. You got it. Exactly.
Psych majors are right. Often when I give talks to kids in school about, you know, different careers, and I often start off by saying, if I can prevent one person here from becoming a lawyer or a doctor,
well,
I will consider my mission accomplished.
My question is kind of about getting my foot in the door. I've been writing little comics and making characters now since, like you said,
right.
I was very young, 7 or 8.
Right.
And actually, just right now, I was heading back home from school when you were talking about this. I heard you guys, and it made me think about that. You know, kind of, are there any, you know, bits of advice or anything you might have as far as, you know, how many little comics should I have together before I try to submit, or how do I go about that process?
If you don't start, you'll never get there. First of all, I won't, you know, I will say this. It doesn't pay to tell anyone really, you know, privacy. Oh, it was so hard, this or that, because it's something that you find is your calling, if you really want to do it, and you should use your youth to do it. Don't wait till you're 58. A lot of people do that. Sometimes they come up in my office and say, "Well, now I'm retired, and I can pursue this hobby," not realizing that a professional cartoonist does 10 or 15 cartoons every week.
Oh,
you know, Jack Ziegler, wonderful cartoonist for The New Yorker, said he didn't really feel he got it right till he did his first 3,000. but that's an exaggeration. But there's a truth in the exaggeration, because that's what humor is. Humor exaggerates things. It lies to tell the truth. And the truth is, you can only find your sense of humor, your way of expressing yourself, what is uniquely you, by being you. But not by sitting around and thinking of what it's like to be you in this way, but by actually doing it. So I would just say, start drawing the cartoons and start sending them in. It doesn't hurt, in terms of The New Yorker, to get some of the big book, like the complete cartoons of The New Yorker, so you can understand a little bit of the history or see what has been done, not to copy it, but partly to inspire you, and partly, really, you know, any field that you're involved in, you should know something about the field. So I would, what's your field in psychology?
It would be counseling.
Counseling. Well, that would provide a lot of fodder for humor.
Yes, it would.
You know, like,
yeah,
there's a cartoon. There's a cartoon from Bruce R. Kaplan where it's not exactly a counseling cartoon, but I think it works that way. With the one person is saying, "Well, the first thing to do is to completely change who you are." It's sort of like, you know, it's like the Woody Allen line. My one wish in life is that I was somebody else. But I think, you know, even if you don't pursue this career, I think that humor in counseling and in psychology, and one of my interests actually is, and I teach a course out at the University of Michigan called The Art and Science of Humor, which is interdisciplinary, but largely looks at the psychology of humor, is to see humor as not just something that occurs in the professional realm, but is an integral part of our lives, and not just as a relief or a comic relief or stress relief, although it certainly does that, but as a way to give us perspective on the world, a way for us to interact with other people, and any group of people naturally interacting will be using humor, will be laughing, and a way with really coping with life, because what humor has is this ambiguity. It sees things, in different ways. So, I think you could pursue psychology and cartooning, and good luck to you on both.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan, for the call. Isn't it wonderful that we can laugh, Robert, when you think about it? It's an unusual thing to do. We laugh.
Well, absolutely. And if a visitor from outer space came here and looked at us and didn't have that, he would actually wonder what's going on. I mean, laughter is the only emotion, and it is an emotion, which is triggered in this way by a really complex set of cognitive determinations. It's a little hard, but it's I'll describe a cartoon to you. Okay. It's a knife, and it has all corkscrews, and it's called French Army knife.
Get it right.
At a certain point, they drink wine, but right. it comes together. So a complex set of mental cognitions produces in laughter a type of reflex. That's really, really very unusual. And laughter is wonderful, and humor is wonderful. And one of the reasons is it's an emotion. And when we think of the other emotions, the ones we usually think of are things like shame, anger, fear. And these are very narrowing emotions. They sort of direct us to do one thing in terms of fear, run away, in terms of anger, fight. And humor is a broadening emotion. It opens ourselves up cognitively because it really directs us to do nothing. And you know what? That's usually a good course of action.
All right. Let's go to Paul.
That's a good course of action. And, and that course of action can be made in a joke, in that little a phrase, just don't do something. Stand there.
Right. Paul is next from Soldiers Grove. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
My original question was, where do cartoonists come from? But I guess you sort of answered that.
Where do you live?
Where I live out in southwest Wisconsin.
That's where they come from.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
Just look outside. You'll see there's these little, self-storage bins out there. And if you open up, if you look in, they're busily drawing away. Well, they come from everywhere, really. And the New Yorker cartoonists they're located all over the country, and there's no particular one location. And what the genetics or the environmental background I don't know.
Now, do you know cartoonists that do that cartoon caption thing when they make their own cartoons? They draw a funny picture and then puzzle over it, and is that how they do their cartoons?
Well, I understand what you're saying. You're saying, do cartoonists actually run their own caption contest in their minds?
Yeah.
And solve it. And sometimes you do that. Sometimes you but it's not like you're just picking any image at random. You sort of have the idea that there will be, something funny. So, and the way you often start out in that is that you're drawing. Humor and cartooning, humor in general is a type of play, I will say that. All animals play and human beings play, but pretty much grown-ups stop playing except through humor when they grow up, which means just fooling around with things for the pure pleasure of it. So let's say I'm drawing a picture of, like a cartoon cliche, lemmings, right? Okay, the lemmings. Well, I can draw the lemmings going down. Maybe I'll put a diving board where each one of them dives off of, and then I'll think of something to say. Or maybe I'll have the lemmings, instead of off the cliff going down, maybe I'll have them going up. And so I drew a picture like that, and I looked at it, and I looked at it, and finally I came up with a title called What Lemmings Believe. And to me, that was sort of like, and one of the nice things I think about humor, and I think the type of New York humor, is that it's really also a type of conceptual art, which is that people could look at that And they could read in a lot of different meanings. I mean, for me, it all of a sudden said, ah, this is sort of my take on religion. And other people might think something else. But sometimes you come up simply with the line. So when I you know, we keep hearing all the debate about same-sex marriage, and I thought of, I just, the phrase came into my mind of a guy saying to his wife, what's your view on some sex marriage? You know, so therefore it's not the picture. I just sort of have the line.
Right.
So it works both ways.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul, very much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Robert Mankoff is our guest. He is the cartoon editor of The New Yorker and is a cartoonist himself, having had more than 800 of his cartoons published in the magazine. And we're talking about humor and captions and what makes something funny, but also quite specifically about The New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest, the winners, the losers, and everybody in between, which is a new book that has just been published. And Robert has edited the book and written the intro for the book, and we're welcoming phone calls or an email. If you want to send an email, it's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, or the phone number here is 800-486-8655. More of your phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls now for Robert, and let's go to Michael from Whitefish Bay. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
Hello.
I'd like to ask your guest if he was fortunate enough to know the great prose humorist of The New Yorker, S.J. Perlman, and if he knew that Perlman, after he graduated from Brown, was a graphic cartoonist for several years. His cartoons are published in a book called That Old Gang of Mine. And in the book cover, it says that that these cartoons led to his being invited to Hollywood by the Marx Brothers to work on their scripts, and that that paved the way to his longtime association with The New Yorker magazine.
I did not know. Our path crossed because I started in 1977 going up to the elevator on 25 West 43rd Street. I knew it was S.J. Perlman, but I was not going to go up and say, I am a slavish admirer of your work. but I was, I mean, especially his writing. He certainly, and I knew about his cartoons at Brown and his writing along with his writing for the Marx Brother. And that sensibility, S.J. Perlman's sensibility, does permeate a lot of The New Yorker still, certainly through the work of Woody Allen, the work of Jack Handy. Anybody deals in with sort of an inspired type of absurdism, where, you know, one of the things that where it differs people is sort of how much what I call unresolved incongruity, strangeness, can they tolerate in humor? Do they really have to get everything, or can they just enjoy it? And with you know, with S.J. Perlman, you can often just, you know, you enjoy the words and the silliness, and there's something really wonderful to be said for that. Like, here's a really silly cartoon that I love. You can't say exactly what it means, but I find it delightful. It's a Charles Barsotti cartoon. It's a huge piece of pasta on the phone, and he's saying, "You silly, you crazy bastard, how are you?" You know, that's just wonderful, wonderful to enjoy. And I think that type of stuff is inspired by the inspired silliness and wordplay of S.J. Perlman. That goes all the way through The New Yorker to Woody Allen, to Jack Handy, to Monty Python. So big, big fan of S.J. Perlman.
Thank you.
I would recommend to you this book if you want to pick it up. It's called That Old Gang of Mine.
I will definitely be going up online and I'm sure I'll be able to get it, and I will get it.
Thank you so much for the recommendation. I haven't thought of that song in ages. My mom used to play that on the piano, That Old Gang of Mine. It's a good title, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks, Michael, very much for the call. Let's go to Jeff from Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is really a privilege. We friends of mine, we loved The New Yorker when I lived in Chicago. We looked forward to each issue, and we used to laugh on Sunday mornings when we had our breakfast and whatnot. But one of my favorite cartoons, I was wondering if it was one of yours, was it was an office setting where a guy was looking at his appointment book on the phone, and he goes, "Never. How about never? Does never work for you?"
Well, that is mine, but you got it wrong.
Oh, okay.
And let me parse that cartoon for you. Okay, the cartoon, and it'll give you a little humor theory as well. The cartoon is a guy who's looking at that appointment book and he's saying, "No Thursdays out. How about never? Is never good for you?" Now the way that cartoon works, and I think the way cartoons generally work, is that in logic and a normal world, a thing can't be A and not A, right? It's one thing or another. But in cartoon, they have an ambiguity. So why that cartoon works is that the syntax is one of politeness, right? That's why he has to say is never good for you, because he could just say how about never, and that would just sort of be snotty, right? But what he does is the syntax is politeness. No Thursday's out, how about never? It's never good for you, but the message is rude. And we get that little cognitive synergy of both coming together. So that is my cartoon, and thanks for
I know
thanks
people
for
in Chicago that work in a publishing office just loved that one. That went on for days.
No, I know, and it got reprinted a lot and stolen a lot as well. But the piracy is the sincerest form of flattery in that age.
Well, take care. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for the call. So you seem to have so much thought and analysis of what's going into a cartoon. Some of the people, though, just you look at the cartoon and whoops, there's the caption. It's almost as though it comes from your subconscious, right?
Well, it does. I mean, in other words, it's like, look, you can analyze music, right? But that analysis is not the thing that creates it.
Yes.
You know, both are valid. People, you know, often object to, because I do research into humor and the like, and there are conferences about humor that does this, and people come to these conferences and they're disappointed because the papers aren't funny. You know, and mm-hmm. I'll clean this up a little bit.
Okay.
And I say, it's like going to a conference on human sexuality and not scoring. And complaining.
Yeah. Let's go. Thanks, Jeff, for your call. We have a couple lines open now. 800-486-8655 is the number. Scott from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi there. Actually, I'm glad for the previous caller in bringing up piracy because I wound up doing tenant counseling as a volunteer in three different cities. And in every one of those newsletters of the agencies I was volunteering for, they use the same cartoon. And it was what I want to find out about. Well, the cartoon itself was very germane in that it's just a single panel with a picture of the Earth hanging in space.
Right.
And a caption coming, a balloon with a voice coming from out of the panel saying, "Earth, this is God. I found new tenants. You have 30 days to vacate." Well, you know, obviously this would work in a tenant counseling.
Funny, let me just interject. I once did a cartoon where it's cave people, and at the entrance is a huge bear, and the woman is saying to the cave guy, "Hun, it's the landlord."
Should have used that one too.
Yeah, right.
I guess my question is there like a public domain? How does
It's not public domain now. And on the Cartoon Bank, cartoonbank.com, we sell the cartoons in the New Yorker Cartoonist. If you want to use it in a newsletter, it costs a little money. If you want to use it in a presentation, it's $19.95. The split is with the artist. This is how they support themselves. It's not public domain, absolutely not, because it's copyrighted, and because this is how the people make their living. That said, you know, people do rip them off and steal them, just like they rip off and steal everything else. But a lot of people also pay for it because you get a higher resolution file. You're not in contravention of the law, especially if you're a company. You won't get sued. And it's not like we're sending out jackbooted thugs to round up the cartoon pirates, but anybody listening, the prices are reasonable. This is the way the artists make a living. So it seems to me to make sense that you, and if everybody keeps stealing and no one ever pays the cartoonist, there are not going to be any cartoons to steal. I hope that sets everybody straight out there. Don't make me come out there to Wisconsin.
So does that mean they're covered by copyright? It's a copyright
they're copyrighted. They're copyrighted, and they're not. It doesn't involve fair use either, unless it was, let's say, for instance, the cartoons are licensed all the time for textbooks and presentation. Any reputable company will not just use it. Of course, like I said, people do take the material, and I mean sometimes they don't know where the source is. But certainly, if you go up to if you see it in the New Yorker, you know what the source is. And there's both and there's CartoonBank.com, and we make it very, very easy to license it. So that's my little sales pitch.
Thanks very much for the call. Do you go through the day seeing I would think this would be an easy thing for you to do, seeing cartoons everywhere.
Not really.
No?
Because you know I've. Kind of pick up my daughter at school, take out the garbage, try to avoid various chores that have been set out for me by by my spouse, and what you do is like a writer, you sit down to work. Maybe it's happening subconsciously. And every once in a while something will strike you, but pretty much you sit down at a drawing board and you say, you know, I'm gonna apply my brain to this and my seat to this chair and sit here, and that's how work gets done. It's, you know, I wouldn't say it's like the Edison thing where it's, you know, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. I always wondered, did Edison invent things in a sauna? That seems a little too much. but there's a lot of sweating the details and work.
Michael from Stevens Point. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good. Doing good. I just wanted to comment, you know, I'm a big fan of the New Yorker cartoons. I actually bought the collection
a couple
years ago and gave a present to my nephew, you know, said if you read this book, you know, The Secrets of Life are contained in it. There's two favorites that I have. I cut out a cartoon probably about every 2 weeks, you know, something that really strikes my fancy. But my two favorite ones are the one you mentioned about Fusilli. There's just something crazy about that guy on the phone talking. The other one is the picture, and I'm sure I'm not going to set this up correctly, but it's a baseball comic, ostensibly. There's a guy, the pitcher, and there's a catcher sitting there waiting for the signal, ready to go.
Wait a second. Is the catcher saying, one of them I like, is the catcher's just saying, strike him out?
No, the catcher's saying nothing. There's the catcher, and sitting on home plate is a dog with a leash in his mouth.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness. That's
right. So, you know, you have to think about it for a second. It's like, oh, yeah, walk the dog.
And that's wonderful because they do have this puzzle aspect. But, you know, what I would say, out of 1,000 people, some people might like that. Some people might get it. Other people would have other favorites. And I think that's wonderful. If everybody, because it really speaks to our individuality, our uniqueness. I think it'd be a pretty sad instance if people say, "Well, is there one cartoon you know that everybody likes and the other cartoon?" No, it isn't. It's just like you said. That's that very idiosyncratic and interesting Danny Shanahan cartoon that you like, and I like that one. But I also like the one where the catcher is just out there. This is from the 40s, and he's just saying to the pitcher, "Strike him out." Isn't that what the catcher is basically always saying? What else would he be saying?
That's right. Yeah, we all find what we want in these things. I mean, I think that's the neat thing about a cartoon is that, you know, there's different ones that appeal to different people.
Absolutely.
And I think it tends to be instantaneous. You look at it and it clicks.
Right. You look at it. One thing I say is about a cartoon, and this can be even when they're a little bit not PC. For example, there was a cartoon that appeared in The New Yorker. And I often do this a little bit as a test thing. To illustrate this point, and it shows a gallows, and there are steps going up to the gallows, and there's also a ramp for the handicapped. Now, what will happen is that people will, you know, some people will laugh at that, some people will repress that laugh. You know what I mean? Because they feel, oh no, this is that. It's interesting. I once did show this cartoon at a presentation in which John Hockenberry of NPR was there, and John is in a wheelchair, and I said, "Do you mind this?" And he didn't mind it at all. So we're often sensitive for people in a surrogate way when they wouldn't be sensitive.
And thinking of the dog, maybe this is just me because I love dogs, but it seems to me as though there are more dogs than cats in the New Yorker cartoons. Are there?
There may be more dogs than cats, but cat cartoon books sell better than
dog
books. Right. I think the cat people are more, you know, fiercely loyal. And maybe also because for a cat, we have to project more.
Right.
We need a little bit more fantasy anthropomorphism. The dog is clearly happy to see us.
Yeah, I know.
We're not making that up. The dog is very happy. You know, the cat, well, we're not sure. I think the cat is inherently more humorous because we project onto it and because there's more ambiguity in it. And, in the cat cartoon. I mean, Sam Gross has done some wonderful animal cartoons. There's one in which a cat looks like a psychologist, and there's a little rat in the maze saying, "You don't look like a psychologist to me."
Thanks, Michael, for your call. Let's go to Libby from Eau Claire. Hi, Libby.
Hi. I have a very quick question, and then I'll take my answer off the air. I'm wondering if there's an age limit for entering the contest. I have a 10-year-old daughter who just draws cartoons all the time.
I think we recently altered that, but I think you still have to be over 13. And why,
okay.
I'm not sure. But I don't think you can be 10. I don't know. I can't remember why. It used to have to be 18, and you couldn't be a Canadian. Somehow we opened it up to Canadians now. We just know how funny they are, and they just run away with all the contests and stuff. And I'm sure if we opened it up to 10-year-olds, they would as well. So your daughter draws cartoons?
She does, yes. She loves it.
Oh, well, that's great. And she puts captions on them as well?
Oh, yes.
So tell me one of your daughter's cartoons.
We
sign her up.
I'm sorry?
We could sign her up right here. That's like the thing I said. Sometimes, as I said, I go to these high schools and stuff, and it's a joke. Hey, let's face it, I'm a licensed humorist. I should joke around. I say, and it could be usually not the 10, but maybe they're in the 8th grade or so. I would say, well, who wants to be a cartoonist? And then someone will raise their hands, and to the horror of the teachers there, I say, well, you can quit school right now. So don't tell your daughter to quit school, but like one or two more years, that's all she needs. And then she should come to the big city and enjoy the high life of a New Yorker cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, but one of the things I would say is that when a child likes that, really, really encourage it. Because, you know, the other thing I say also partly as a joke is the office will always be there.
Right. How true.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. The economy is so bad. Maybe they won't be, but I think it will.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. I know you said this, I think, facetiously. Do you open this to Canadians? What about the Irish? What about the Saudis? What about the Chinese?
What about...
Is it open to everybody?
I think it's some sort of weird legal thing where you don't know what the rules of their country are in terms of entering contests. So it's some complicated thing, or the lawyer boffins at the New Yorker could explain it to you, but it would take a long time.
Uh-huh.
And it wouldn't be funny.
So how many cartoons do you do a week?
Well, cartoonists do, as I said, but probably between 8 and 15 cartoons a week. Since I'm the cartoon editor, I do less. I used to do that, but I'm sort of a utility guy who comes in so that if there is if David Remnick, if all of a sudden we need a cartoon on Joe the Plumber, you know,
right.
and it's a deadline, David will ask me to do it. And the one I came up with, this was right after he rose to prominence, was two guys working on the street, and they see Joe the Plumber, Joe the Lawyer, Joe the Accountant, Joe the Diamond Dealer, and also a blimp with Joe's and also Bed Bath and Joe, the store, and there's one is saying to the other, maybe he's not the small businessman we thought he was. So I'm often there that, but most of the cartoonists do about 10.
Yeah.
And when new cartoonists ask how many cartoons they should do, I say, do 10, and they say, why? I say, hey, because 9 out of 10 things in life don't work out.
Hey, yeah. Thank you, Robert, so much for being with us. It was great
fun.
Well,
it was a real, real pleasure.
Yeah, it was. Thanks. Robert Mankoff, our guest in the book, again, is the New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest book, which has just been published, and Robert is a cartoonist. He's had 800 of his cartoons, more than that probably, published in the New Yorker in the past 30 years. He's the author of The Naked Cartoonist, A New Way to Enhance Your Creativity. And he's also edited many cartoon books and published four of his own. He edited the complete cartoons of The New Yorker for the 2004 holiday season, featuring at that time, 68,647 cartoons. It's now up, of course, past 70,000. Well, that was fun, huh? Yep. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and to Rhonda as well for answering your phone calls. Tomorrow, let me let you know that we're going to be talking with someone from Foreign Policy Magazine. They had an interesting idea. They do this every now and then, asking the country's brightest minds to come up with whatever they're thinking about. And this time they were thinking about the team that could best guide number 44 through the turbulent years ahead. So we'll be talking about that. And also a really gorgeous book on the ocean, which is very heavy, so let me pick it up here. The National Geographic Ocean and Illustrated Atlas, gorgeous book. And so we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And that'll be at 10 o'clock. And a reminder, we wanted Calvin Trillin is joining us on Thursday. Plus, we'll hear interviews of Studs Terkel that have happened over the years. So that's coming up on Thursday. Well, I guess that's it. Thanks very much for listening, everybody, and for all of your calls. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and then many more hours of interesting and important conversation ahead. So please stay with us. I'll be with you again tomorrow morning at 9. And you are listening. It's a minute before 10 to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.